Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. Now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Coasting with me this evening is Matt the Minion. Matt, how's it going?
I'm doing good. Thanks for asking. How are you, John?
Well, thank you for asking, Mr. Minion. I'm not used to having that reciprocated. I'm doing rather well, thank you.
Oh, good.
Had a good weekend with my son, actually, so everything is right in the world. We've got a really interesting show tonight. We've got Claude Werner, the research analyst and tactical professor, joining us to talk about threat management for the armed citizen. Should be a interesting topic of conversation. I was actually out in Atlanta this last week and got to talk with Claude a little bit about this in person before I invited him onto the show this weekend, and I think that everyone will be entertained, I hope, at the very least. So, just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Colt. Colt, the legend continues. So, the Polypalooza 2 training conference was this last weekend before this last weekend. Wow, that was a bad setup. It's almost like I do this for a living.
Almost.
Yeah.
It was last weekend.
Right. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So, anyway, had a lot of fun out there. We raised over $40,000 for Paul's children, which I am incredibly, incredibly thankful to everyone that showed up and everyone that donated items. Was a very fun time, and I am looking forward to being involved with Polypalooza 3 next year, if they will have me be involved with it. So, and other than that, what else is going on? And then we'll get Claude on the line. Like I said, went out to Atlanta to do some photos for the Knights Armament Test Rifle. Everything is going well there, and I will actually have a write-up on the website on that rifle sometime this week, and I think everyone will be relatively not surprised, because honestly, the rifle's just run and run, which I think is what everyone expected for it to do. Other than that, Darkstar Gears, Project Rampage, weapon-mounted light, appendix inside the waistband holster is incredibly comfortable and working extremely well, and I will talk more about that at some other point, too, but we can do that when we don't have as interesting of a guest as we do tonight, which I guess means we'll never talk about it since all our guests are interesting. Like the Facebook page. I'll talk about it there.
There you go.
Yeah. Anyway, so joining us tonight is Claude Werner. Claude, are you there?
I am, John.
Excellent. So, and see, we almost just had something fun happen when I knocked over my open water container onto the soundboard in the studio. So that would have been interesting. Anyway, for those that are not familiar, Claude, do you mind going over your background just real quick?
I am a firearms instructor, former Special Forces officer, formerly the chief instructor of the Elite Rogers Shooting School, the hardest shooting school in the world, and now I have a website called tacticalprofessor.com where I try to delve into a little more of the intellectual aspects of keeping yourself safe.
So not the what's better, 9mm versus 45 conversations that you see some people occupy themselves
no.
with?
No. None of the above.
Okay. See, I was making fun of myself there, too, because I do occasionally talk about that stuff, but that's just because people expect me to. So for those that, and I said threat management at the beginning of the show, for those that maybe don't know what we're talking about there, or maybe for me, in case I don't know what we're talking about there, which is entirely possible, what is threat management, especially in the context of the armed citizen?
Well, if we think about it, the great majority of criminal encounters that armed citizens have don't really involve shooting, but all of those incidents involve managing and controlling the opponent's actions. Hopefully before shots are fired. So the way I think about threat management is that there's a very broad array of skills that are mostly interactive with the criminal that go a long way beyond marksmanship and gun handling. So that's the way I'm thinking about it now is threat management is what you're doing to interact with the criminal as opposed to simply manipulating your gun. And then your decision-making or our decision-making as armed citizens is a real big part of that based on the interaction.
Right. Well, and we were discussing something that came up, I don't know, Thursday, I guess, when we had lunch, was the idea, and some other people we were sitting down with, one of them had said something about the fact that when we make a mistake, it's a bunch of little tiny mistakes that add up, and I actually took issue with that. It seems to me that decisions cascade off of one another. So if you start off with good decisions, you tend to make more good decisions. If you start off with bad decisions, they sort of fall down the line from there. So what you're pretty much saying is that we want to try and interact with the bad guy in a way that will get it to the point where we never, ever even have to worry about manipulating a firearm.
Exactly. And because as I've, you know, for a long time, I said the conscious mind has a lifespan of one shot. I've watched that for many, many years, and I have no idea how many thousands of iterations where once we start shooting, the conscious mind just shuts off. Well, now I'm expanding that, and I'm going to say that the conscious man has a lifespan of one shot or one bad decision. As soon as we make a bad decision, I think what happens is then we become preoccupied with the consequences of that bad decision as opposed to then getting our input in from the situation and continuing to try and make good decisions, and we end up with that cascade effect. Okay. Similarly, as you said, if we make a good decision early on in the circumstance, that tends to continue on in making good decisions. So, you know, that whole process of decision making is so important in this endeavor that we have, which ultimately what we're trying to do is achieve a positive end goal or a positive outcome.
Okay. And the ideal positive outcome being is that we avoid a fight in the first place.
Exactly.
Right. And it seems like some people, it's interesting to me, we've got about a minute left before we have to go to break, but it's interesting to me that a lot of the conversations that people seem to preoccupy themselves with almost seem like they've already come to a foregone conclusion that a fight is going to happen, and that's never set in stone. I mean, very rarely
exactly.
Is it set in stone. So.
Yeah, that's definitely the case, that people think about it as this is what's going to happen, when that's not necessarily true if we manage the threat correctly in a way that ultimately what we want to have is that criminal decide to just go away, or that we manage the situation so that we don't have a tragic outcome.
Okay. And tragic outcomes can be all sorts of things, and we'll actually probably talk about this a little bit later in the show, but for instance, there have been all sorts of shootings that have occurred that were completely legal but not necessarily moral, and that's where someone maybe has gotten shot that did not need shot once the totality of the circumstances came to light.
Right.
Anyway, we'll talk about that a little bit more. We've actually got to go to break. Right now we're discussing threat management with the tactical professor, Claude Werner, and you are listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by Walther. Walther and the new PPX. Grip it, love it, get it, the tough Walther PPX. Then get $100 worth of PPX accessories free. The PPX is Walther's tough workhorse pistol at a value price. Now get an extra magazine, polymer holster, and dual magazine pouch free with the purchase of a new Walther PPX at participating dealers. Grip the famous ergonomic handle and you'll love it. Shoot it and feel the difference. The Walther PPX. Grip it, love it, and get it now. Offer good with $9.95 shipping and handling. So, this evening we are talking with Claude Werner, the tactical professor, about threat management for the armed citizen. Claude, are you still there?
I'm still here, John.
Perfect. So before the break, we were discussing how decisions tend to cascade off of one another. Good decisions follow good decisions. Bad decisions follow bad decisions. Now, that's not to say that if for whatever reason we find ourselves having started off from a place of improper thinking or we just weren't paying attention, that we can't recover from that. It's just more difficult to do so, right?
Exactly, exactly. And the aviation industry, not surprisingly, has a pretty well-developed doctrine about this, and they call it controlling events that are currently happening and mitigating circumstances that have gotten responses that you didn't really want. And I think that we as armed citizens have that same capability too, to, you know, to say, well, this didn't happen the way I wanted it to, but how can I then get myself back on track?
Right. So, I mean, I guess, and that's just kind of where, and you've done all sorts of research that has shown that training is not necessarily something that people have to successfully defend themselves, but it is something that sure helps when you've started out making a bad decision and want to recover from it.
Absolutely true. That, as we've talked about a number of times, many, many people successfully defend themselves from criminals without the slightest bit of training. It's when a bad decision starts, a cascade effect, that your training can help you get back on track and, you know, not have things go any worse than what they already started out to be.
Right. And I've certainly experienced that in my personal life, and I'm not going to get into it on air, but it is funny how you find yourself remembering small little things that you've heard in the past and going, okay, this might be helpful right now. So as far as threat management skills that maybe people should talk about more or should practice more, what are some of those that maybe are overlooked or should be thought about?
Well, there was an incident that occurred just this past week to an off-duty sheriff's deputy sergeant that really reinforced one skill that I think most people don't practice enough or at all and really need to. And what happened in that incident was that the deputy heard a noise in his garage at about 3 a.m. and opened the door and saw a figure there and then shot the figure.
Right.
Well, it was his 16-year-old daughter coming back in after she had snuck out to go to a party or something. Hmm. So he shot her. His marksmanship, and here again, his marksmanship was good. Unfortunately, the decision-making then to have a Rule 4 failure, know your target and what is beyond it,
right.
Because he just didn't have a flashlight.
Right.
That's all he had to do was just have a flashlight, and then second of all, to verbalize to the opponent. Because I'm sure if he had said something on the order of, like what I teach my students, is at least one response, stop, don't come any closer.
Yeah.
He probably would have heard something like, Daddy, it's me, and that would have reset the whole incident. And if he had put, even if she hadn't said anything, and he'd put a flashlight on her, he would have said, what are you doing in the garage at 3 o'clock in the morning,
right,
instead of shooting her?
Right.
So that just simple flashlight technique, and there are all sorts of them. Some of them are easier to use than others, but I really think that people, you know, ought to do that. And the good thing is that, once again, as you and I have discussed, since so many people only have access to indoor ranges,
yeah,
well, indoor ranges give you really an ideal environment for practicing with a flashlight in a way that when we're outside, you know, it's hard to tell how you're oriented and so forth. But even when the lights are on an indoor range, if you have a decent flashlight, you can tell if you're shining your light on the target.
Yeah.
And so that's all people really need to do is when they go to have a practice session in the range, well, maybe they ought to take their flashlight along and just, for one thing, it establishes a mindset for them of, I should identify my target before shooting it. And then second of all, it gives them that physical skill of, well, this is what it's like. You know, do they want to shoot with one hand? Do they want to use a two-handed technique or whatever?
Right.
You know, and then that helps keep them from getting into that situation, which then actually, going back to the cascade effect, had a cascade effect of bad decisions on decision-making on that deputy's part, because after he shot his daughter, she wasn't killed, but she was wounded, he put her in his car and then decided to drive to the hospital, you know, which I won't critique that decision, but then he decided to drive faster than he could drive safely and got into a crash, and the ambulance had to come and pick them up anyway,
right,
and thus delayed his daughter's treatment. So there was an example of how one bad decision led to another one.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, once someone starts panicking, which I'm sure anybody in that situation after you've just shot your 16-year-old daughter would be panicking. That's certainly
right.
Understandable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all sorts of bad things follow from that. And it's funny, too, you mentioned the flashlight, because this is like a reoccurring theme on the show where I hammer home to people that you need to have a flashlight for a firearm, especially one stored for home defense. And people say things like, well, I've got night sights, so I can see my sights. And it's funny to me, like, the magnitude with which they are missing the point that I'm trying to make with a statement like that.
Exactly. We have to be able to know what our target is before we engage it. That's just not an option that we can afford to miss,
right,
as private citizens.
Really, even anybody. Do you think that's just like a breakdown of, you know, practicing decision making when we've got a gun in our hands, as far as like whether or not we should even shoot in the first place?
Well, I think that, going back to the idea that this is an interactive process, and herein lies a fundamental flaw with the way that most people practice. And I won't even say training, because the way I think of it is training is something you get from somebody else and practice is something you do on your own.
Right.
So the way that most people practice is they think about it only in terms of themselves and what they're doing, whereas any encounter with an adversary, and let's say in the case of this deputy, it wasn't a criminal, it was a daughter, but he perceived her as an adversary initially. Anything like that is an interactive skill. And so if we don't accustom ourselves mentally to the idea that this is going to involve interaction, communication, and all that sort of thing, then what we're doing is setting ourselves up for failure instead of success.
Right, right.
And so that's a bad decision that occurs ahead of time, not during the moment.
Well, and isn't that something William April talks about as far as pre-need thinking and decision-making?
Exactly.
You know, as far as if you're trying to learn something, once you immediately find yourself needing it, you're probably not going to do so well at that.
Yeah, exactly. Once again, we'll go back to the conscious mind thing that, you know, it's hard to think about circumstances like that when they're occurring. Yeah. And in many cases, what will happen is that the situation will resolve itself okay. But in some cases, it doesn't. And when it doesn't, the results can be very tragic, either from the standpoint of, you know, shooting your daughter or going to prison for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of decisions that we want to do ahead of time, as William said. And that way, we don't have to try to make those decisions at the point of contact, because we're probably not going to do that well.
Right. Well, I mean, that's something interesting, too, is it just because a lot of it seems to me, and please correct me if this sounds stupid or not, but it seems to me that the reason why a lot of people don't seem to think about these needs beforehand is because they just don't even know that the need exists, period. And any situation they've come up with in their heads is very cut and dry, and there's no ambiguity involved.
That's right. That's exactly it. And one of the things that I've been focusing on lately is the concept of decisional shooting,
yeah,
the making the no-shoot decision. And and how do you train that, and how do you practice that? And when people don't think about the fact that they may have to make a discrimination within their own home, then they're not thinking correctly about it.
Right.
And that's an issue.
Yeah. Well, and it's really the best example of that that I've ever had personally, and I'm sure there are all sorts of great instructors that teach it, but I took Craig Douglas's arm movement and structures class, and he breaks down so many different ways that someone can be in your house but not need shot yet,
mm-hmm.
that it's amazing. We've got to go to break here in about 15 seconds, Claude, so I don't want to get too far down a different rabbit hole. But I guess when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about that decisional shooting and how we train that. So
you can have a sip of your tasty beverage and get yourself back on track and reset now, John.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. We're talking with Claude Werner, and we will be right back. You are listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group. Makers of firearms finishes so tough you need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest levels of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. So I think it's funny that I can read the new ad earlier in the show perfectly. The ad that I've read a million times at this point, that's the one that I stumble over word.
Well, you were kind of multitasking there, too. So.
I was. So I'll post that later on Facebook, yes, though, and people can see what I was doing. Anyway, we were talking with Claude Werner, research analyst and the tactical professor, about threat management for the armed citizen. Claude, are you still there?
Still here, John.
Perfect. I'm glad that I've not hung up on you yet. That would be embarrassing and sad. Sad and embarrassing. So anyway, we were talking about decisional shooting. And see, I said it right that time. Because I wasn't thinking about it. We're talking about that and how we train that. What are your thoughts as far as how do we get people to work through the shoot no shoot process?
Well, there's a number of resources that are available for private citizens, some of which are pretty simple. If nothing else, you can do things like put a variety of colors on a target and have a friend call out, a target or a color, and that's sort of a beginning of the shoot, no shoot decision. It's the sort of thing, though, that is a lot better executed when you have somebody who understands how to train it, do it for you. And let's go back to the training philosophy then. This is one of those issues that's really facilitated by having good training and participating in training beyond just going to the range and practicing. And I hate to, tell people that they need to go out and do this, but the fact of the matter is it just works a lot better because it's an interactive process.
Right.
And having somebody who understands how to control that flow and push you to the point of learning but not push you past the point of failure, that's, I don't know if I'll say it's an art or a science, but it's definitely something that's learned over time. So I think that's something that people can get a lot out of by taking some outside training.
Right. Well, and it's something, too, that it's funny you mentioned that as far as, because I've known some instructors, and I'm not going to name any names, but they're excellent instructors as long as the student they are teaching is at a certain level, and they cannot scale down or scale up to take into account, less or more skill on the part of the student. For instance, if the minion and I were out doing a drill like that, my ability to distinguish between, colors getting called and the speed at which they're called after having done this for 26 years versus him being new at it, completely different. I mean, that's one of the things that's been impressive as far as watching you train people and talking with people that you've worked with, is that you're rather talented at that, so I hear.
Well, I think that what I want to do is I want to set people up for success. And I will credit my special forces training for that, that there I had to go back and forth between training some of the most highly trained soldiers in the world, you know, the special forces, versus training guerrillas who are, you know, they make the average armed citizen look like a member of Delta by comparison.
Right.
So that ability to scale up and down, I think, is really important. And especially, you know, you've attended many classes where it's an open enrollment, and the skill level of people that are involved in the class, that are taking the class, varies quite a bit. And so I think it's important that an instructor be able to modify, you know, the approach, or sometimes it's just a question of saying something in a different way to different students to get the point across.
Right. Well, and that's, you know, it's funny too, because you cause quite a few online arguments with people that will read something you've said and not given any thought to why you're saying it, or really done any research of their own to see some of the other things you've said. I'm sure it will shock some of them to hear you say something like, well, you really need to go in and take instruction with somebody to learn that properly, just based off of some other things you've said in the past. But that's kind of why I like having you on the show, is just because I think it gives people a much better picture of what you're talking about, which I think is lost on some people. As far as, you know, other than calling colors or maybe numbered targets or anything like that, do you think that having people draw to a target and not shooting at all could be something that should be added to a training regimen, just to get people into the habit of not always shooting the gun when it comes out of the holster?
Well, in my upcoming set of threat management classes that I'm teaching, that's exactly how I'm approaching it, where I'm having them draw to a challenge and then issue a threat command, at which point some of them will, you know, based on the target, some of them will get a threat indicator and some of them will not.
Yeah.
And I think that's another part of it that needs to be done as well, especially if we're dealing with the law enforcement community. And for the most part, I don't train law enforcement officers anymore, but I would like to see this more, where law enforcement officers especially are trained that just because someone else is shooting doesn't mean you should be shooting. And actually, oddly enough, I've run into not that many, but a few private citizen incidents where that came into play as well. You know, that one person has a target and the other one does not. And so just because someone else is shooting doesn't mean you should be shooting.
Right. Well, and reactionary gunfire is never something pleasant. Or, well, not, I won't say never, but it's not always pleasant, I should say. At least
in a lot of cases, it doesn't accomplish what we want it to.
Right.
And I'm going to go back to this recurring theme that I've been harping on lately of recognizing what our positive outcome is and how do we achieve that.
Yeah. Well, and I actually think that the positive outcome, like you said, and this is certainly something that I've been sort of honing in on a little bit lately as well, just as I've progressed a little bit past the, hey, I can shoot a gun really fast and really accurately, is that, you know, as cool as that is for me, and hey, as neat as I look when I put a video up on Facebook doing that, at the end of the day, not firing a shot is really, really what we want to be going for.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, because to me, a very positive outcome is not having to interact in an unpleasant way with the law enforcement community.
Yeah.
Just don't want that. It's unpleasant. It's expensive. It's time consuming. And so to the extent that we can convince the opponent to just go away, that's a win.
Right. So, and some other things, I guess, that you're a proponent of, and I know Chuck Haggard, our mutual friend from Topeka, is a proponent of as well, is less lethal options for the concealed carrier. And I know that a lot of people will talk about less lethal options in the context of law enforcement, but it's not really discussed as much with private citizens. Why do you think that is?
I think that a lot of people are intimidated by the fact that they may have to articulate why they used lethal force when they had a non-lethal or less lethal option available.
Okay.
And, you know, if we have a sufficient amount of legal education, then that allows us to be able to say that and not be intimidated by the ability or inability to articulate, well, why did you shoot him when you could have sprayed him? Well, he's twice my size, and I have an implanted cardio diverter defibrillator, and I cannot get into fights because it'll kill me.
Right.
You know that, and so being able to say that and articulate that, I think that's what a lot of people are afraid of. And then to a certain extent, in some cases, it's just laziness.
Yeah.
And that I cannot abide in someone if they're just going to be lazy and say, well, I don't feel like carrying a 1.5-ounce object on the end of my T-ring. No, that's not a good reason at all. I don't leave home without my pepper spray. Now, in some cases, it's not going to be the appropriate choice, but in a lot of cases, it is.
Right. Well, and it's I've been having several concurrent conversations with some of the Facebook users about not only less lethal options employed against people armed with lethal tools, and also what is acceptable levels of gear for people to carry. It's actually really interesting to watch people that are entirely okay with themselves carrying a gun. And, you know, maybe a reload. They start to get funny when someone will carry something like a medical kit or a fixed blade knife or, like you said, spray. Or it's just interesting to see where everyone's, well, that's paranoid line is,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
We've got about 30 segments. Wow. I wish we had 30 segments. That'd be an awesome show. We got about 30 seconds left before the next segment. I guess we'll talk a little bit more about maybe things to think of if you're going to start carrying spray. And I also, too, want to hear about some of the classes you're teaching. You've also got something you're doing with William April in September, October, I want to say. So
September 27th in New Orleans.
Hey, we'll talk about that, too, in the next segment. Right now we're talking with Claude Werner, the tactical professor, and you are listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Bar Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. So, we are talking with Claude Werner, the tactical professor, about threat management for the armed citizen. And we were actually discussing non-lethal options before we had to go to break. Claude, are you still there?
Still here.
Excellent. So you've only got to put up with me for the next 10 minutes or so, and then the Metallica song will play, and you'll get to go on and enjoy the rest of your evening. So,
but, excellent.
Yeah, I know, right? It's always a chore to have to talk to me. I get tired of
well,
it.
Well, John, you know, as I was listening to the commercial, it actually gave an excellent example of bad decision-making.
Now, keep in mind, before we go into this, that the commercials are what pay my salary, so we want to be
right.
Semi-careful.
No, I thought it was a good commercial, and,
okay.
And they had a really good example. Think about that time that you thought the skunk was a cat.
That's great.
Bad decision making.
Yep. It's funny how just that one little slip in concentration can cause all sorts of problems.
So. Exactly, the cascade effect.
Yeah, and that's something actually that hopefully you will examine in more depth, because if I write an article about it, it will not be nearly as good. But it seems to be overlooked a little bit when we start discussing why things happen. And I don't know, I'm kind of becoming a lot more interested in the why behind things. So.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I've been hanging out with you too much. I don't know. So
I'm a bad influence on you.
I've yeah. I won't talk about the Mickey Mouse comment that you made on Facebook, though I thought that was amazing. But anyway.
And in answer to someone's question, no, my latest Rorschach test of results are not available.
Yeah. Wow. That's speaking of Facebook too, I think we're like what, 2 likes away now from 120,000 on the Ballistic Radio page?
Still 3.
3. So if there are any of you out there in radio land that have not liked the Facebook page, facebook.com/ballisticradio. If we hit 120,000 by the end of the show, I will make the minion do something demeaning tomorrow on video.
Joy.
Yeah, see?
You can be cruel.
I can be. Hey, he's compensated well. Don't tell me how to discipline my servants. See, that was an Archer
Certainly
reference.
Not.
Yes. Anyway, that's only funny to people that watch the FX network. So going on to important things that should be discussed rather than me trying to amuse myself on air while lots of people listen. With spray, what are some things that people should think about just real fast? And then I want to talk about your classes coming up.
I think what they should really think about is when it's appropriate to use it. That there are many situations where we are threatened, but we are not threatened in a way that justifies deadly force as a response. But we have, so then if we don't have an option for a less lethal response, we have essentially no option or the option to submit or flee. And really what I'm trying to emphasize now in a lot of my writings and in my classes is educating people about what their options in fact are, and they're a lot broader than a lot of people think.
Right.
The thing that I am very happy about is that now there are a lot more educational resources for people than when I started and when you started, doing this, that at that time there really, you know, decades ago, there wasn't much information available and it was hard to come by.
Right.
Now there are no shortage of classes, of online resources, of organizations that, you know, especially from the standpoint of what people's legal options are available to for people to think about ahead of time so that they can set themselves up for success.
Right, right. And one thing that I will say as far as, because I'm a fan of having a less lethal option, not everyone can go hands-on with someone, which is a bad idea in almost any circumstance I can think of anyway. But if someone is presenting lethal force towards you, for instance, a club or a knife or what have you, while spraying them is an option and may possibly work, it's maybe not the best option there at that point.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah, the only reason I bring that up is because I was arguing with people all day about that, so I wanted to mention it. Also, too, thank you, everyone in Radioland. We have hit 120,000 likes on Facebook. I find it amazing that you all continue to listen and pay attention, but thank you for doing it. So, anyway, for people that want to get in touch with you, Claude, or would like to take one of your classes, what are some ways they can do that? Now, you're based out of the Atlanta area, correct?
Correct.
The
easiest way for anyone to find out, first of all, what I'm talking about, and second of all, what I'm doing, is to go to my blog, which is tacticalprofessor.com.
Right.
Because I list my classes there. I tend to post every 2 or 3 days with my thoughts about what people ought to be thinking about, in my view, and then let them make their own decisions about, well, that guy's got a really good idea, or he's full of beans.
It seems, too, that, and it's funny you mention that, because some of the people that I run into, they will espouse their ideas as if it is gospel that must be followed to the letter. And then there are the people that I tend to like and have on the show over and over again, and this is what your third time on now, that say, hey, here's what I have to say, and why don't you go and look around and see if it makes sense to you or not. So.
Well, I think it's presumptuous of me to tell people what their options and their circumstances and their responses should be, because I don't know what their situation is, and everybody's different. But what I do like to do is to pose the questions that people should be asking themselves and deriving their own answers to those questions, because I think that's something that's really important for people to think about. What's the underlying question, and then what's the solution that works best for me?
Right. Well, and that seems to I'm very thankful to see that becoming a more popular stance in the training community. It seems to have become it's gained more momentum as of late, and I'm glad to see that, just because I think it's a better way to approach everything. Now, you were mentioning a class down in New Orleans. We got about a minute and a half or so left. When was that again, and how can people sign up for it?
September 27th. It's a joint one-day class between myself and William April, and William will be doing a couple of lectures about the criminal mind and the victim's mind. And the thing I like especially about William is that he portrays very well just how scary some of the people that are predators, just how scary they are, because I think a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
And then my part of that will then be my blocks about live fire decisional shooting, about developing your options, thinking with a gun in your hand, which I think is a really important concept. I'm not happy with the idea that all people focus on in many cases is trying to develop unconscious competence, because right. decision making is a thoughtful, conscious process, and the reason we develop unconscious competence is so we can do that thoughtful decision making. But we have to keep in mind that's part of the end object.
Right. I mean, it seems too for me that all the classes that I go to these days are not really focusing on shooting, but are focusing more on the decision-making process with a gun in my hand. But anyway, Claude, we've ran out of time. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your evening to come and join us tonight. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it.
Hey, thanks. I'm sure I will see you and be in touch with you soon. So have a good evening, sir.
I will. You too.
Thanks. So next week, joining us will be John Chapman from LMS Defense to talk about all sorts of interesting things. And I have an idea that the militarization of police will come up, but I haven't actually asked him if he's okay talking about that yet or not. So we will find out, I guess, next week. Anyway, remember, check out the website, ballisticradio.com, for past episodes. Also, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/ballisticradio. Everyone be safe and see you next week.